Welcome to another edition of Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. Today, I'm very pleased to welcome back to the program Mike McMeekin with the Engineering Change Lab. And today, we're going to be looking at the issue of infrastructure design, nature, engineering, the confluence of it all together. And to do that, we have a guest with us, Jen Molnar. She is the lead scientist and managing director, Center for Sustainability Science at the Nature Conservancy. And if you remember back just a couple of episodes ago, we welcomed Mike over from Engineering Change Lab to talk about the role of the activist engineer. And refresh everyone on what the mission of the Engineering Change Lab is. It's a new nonprofit that is focused on the future of engineering, something that we're talking about as well through the ACEC Research Institute. And ECLUSA's mission is to be a catalyst for change within the engineering community, to help it contribute at the highest possible level in addressing the challenges of the 21st century, of which there are many, not just the role of engineering in society, but then looking at the changing face of the world, what we have to deal with related to climate change, resiliency, sustainability, and all of those issues, which are taking a greater focus of all of our attention as we work for clients, both in the public and private sector. So I do want to bring Mike in to kind of explain where the lab is kind of approaching the issue of nature and environmental engineering in this mission of looking at the challenges ahead and kind of introduce the subject. So Mike, welcome back to the show.
Jeff, thanks for having us back again. We appreciate it. Just by way of background, one of the principles behind the founding of Engineering Change Lab USA is that the world, society, faces lots of challenges as we move through the 21st century. And a lot of those are related to our environment, climate change, the waste we're producing, and the threats to our natural resources, which provide these incalculable values that we all take advantage of, things like carbon capture and sequestration, soil formation, crop pollination, flood protection, clean air, genetic resources for pharmaceuticals, on and on and on, including things like recreation and all of our own spiritual health. Nature is critical and provides tremendous value in all those areas and more. So as we look at what the engineer's role in the 21st century is, we believe there's a major role in helping to protect the environment and to protect our natural resources at a higher level than we've done in the past. So at our last summit, we wanted to explore this concept of environmentally responsible engineering, and particularly from the standpoint of leadership, that in this more complex world, we're going to be called on to exercise more leadership. So we chose to do that through the stories of people who are already demonstrating the type of leadership, both individually and organizationally, to deal with these environmental challenges. And we think the Nature Conservancy is a great example of that leadership, and Jen, with her work at the Conservancy, is a great example of an individual leader in this realm. So that's the story that led up to the recent summit on leadership of environmentally responsible engineering.
Yeah, just, not a small issue here. I think you counted off a number of challenges that face us on a daily basis, and it's just getting to be a longer list related to how society interacts with the environment and how engineers are designing a built environment that also interacts with the environment. So Jen, I mean, welcome, number one, to the program. Number two, I guess, you know, how did you get involved with this? I know you have a background in engineering and your work kind of with the Nature Conservancy. Give us a little bit about your background and how you became engaged with the subject.
Sure, and thank you for having me. I'm excited to be part of this conversation. I began my career as an environmental engineer. I worked for a few years in remediation outside of Boston and really enjoyed the work, but got to a point where I felt like I wanted to be more proactively protecting the environment instead of always chasing the pollution down after the fact. And so thought about what I could do with my career and ended up shifting. And I came to the Conservancy after graduate school 17 years ago, thinking I was going to move into watershed conservation work and more kind of traditional conservation work. And the interesting thing has been, over the time that I've been at the Conservancy, more and more of the work we've done has sort of come at this issue from the other side of how Mike was describing it. Was, you know, we thought initially a lot of our work in conservation was done to protect nature from people, but increasingly we've realized we need to be thinking about the role that nature plays for people and how do we protect nature in ways that actually benefits communities and society. So over the last decade or so, we've really thought a lot more about how do we actually bring that value of nature into the work we're doing for conservation and do that in ways that directly benefit society. And I think this concept around natural infrastructure and thinking about nature as part of engineering solutions has really grown from that and has been something that's resonated with me personally, being an engineer by training, but also is a much bigger part of the work that we do in conservation today.
And it's my understanding that I guess the Nature Conservancy's approach, the partnership approach that you have, revolved around Dow Chemical. You know, how did that kind of fit in with the idea of nature and you know, the built environment interacting?
Sure. So the Conservancy has worked with companies for a long time. A lot of the work started out more companies giving us philanthropic money to fund conservation work in places they cared about. But really starting with Dow, and in the last decade, we've also worked with companies to actually learn how they could shift what they were doing in terms of their business to both help them make smarter business decisions. Because like Mike said, a lot of the nature is underpinning a lot of our economy. So how do they understand new risks? How do they understand new opportunities? And do that in a way that leads to conservation benefits. And that was really the vision behind working with Dow. We began a collaboration with them that's still ongoing, but we began about 10 years ago with the vision of demonstrating how could a company understand how they could integrate the value of nature within their business and have that lead to smarter business decisions and better outcomes for nature. And we did early work in the first few years to pilot looking at specific business decisions, things like water supply at a site in Texas and protecting facilities from hurricanes, and looking at the specific role of nature within those decisions. And we're able to bring together the expertise in both organizations to tackle those challenges. And the interesting thing was, as we started getting some of those early results, what we saw that really resonated with Dow was the fact that nature could provide direct business benefit to the company. And being an engineering company, they saw it in this sort of natural infrastructure lens. One of the early examples we found was that in Texas, they have a large facility in Freeport. We actually found that they could plant a native forest in that region and it would remove air pollution, NOx and ozone for about the same cost as installing another scrubber. So instead of thinking about an engineered solution, they could think about planting a forest in the same way and in the same terms. And we, on our side, we had to figure out how do you make a case for that forest in the same way an engineer would, and how do they think about it in those terms? But it really resonated and was something that has become a thread of the work we've done with them, and they've actually brought it into their business more broadly than what we're doing together. So it's been something that just really resonated as a way to think about nature within the business.
That's really interesting because it shows that, you know, there's a solution out there that might not be directly, you know, a specific design solution, but like you said, planting a forest equals a scrubber. So it you know, they are an engineering firm, essentially that's what they do, but they've been around for a very long time and they kind of have a set way of looking at things. And how much of a change culturally was there with Dow to get them to think this way or to realize that this is an opportunity? Was it an immediate aha? Yes, let's do it. Was it more of a gradual shift? You know, did you get a lot of resistance from, you know, the traditional way of looking at things and planning things? And how did that relationship evolve?
Yeah, no, it's a great question and something that was not a solved issue. It's clearly an ongoing journey for them and for us. But it was interesting when we first started I think there was some skepticism, especially at some of the sites where, you know, there's this environmental nonprofit coming in to work with them, and they had questions about, like, were we just coming in to tell them what they were doing wrong? But as we got into the work and as we started looking at new solutions, I think it tapped into some of just the innovation and the idea of, like, thinking about new solutions. And so as their staff have kind of dove in with us and got into some of these projects, I think it's been something that has kind of opened their eyes to new types of things that they could do within their business. They, one of the big milestones in our work together and within their company was they set in 2015, they set a 10-year goal around valuing nature, where they committed to, as a company, assessing nature in all their projects, looking at their real estate, their capital investments, their R&D, and looking to see, are they having a negative impact on the environment, or is there a benefit to the business from thinking about nature? And they were looking to create $1 billion in business value from that. So looking at for projects that are better for nature, but still good for the business, to make a case internally and to others that it actually makes sense to do this. And getting to that point required making the case to leadership, but then after that, it was rolling it out across the company. And how to, so we built the tools with them that allowed their staff to do that valuation, but also, you know, they set the policies in place and had that main goal. But a lot of the culture change aspects, it was interesting to watch. The Dow staff actually did a lot of trying to tap into personal interest in nature, that it was a lot of the workshops they started with, you know, they have their safety moments, they added nature moments. They would ask questions and have everybody write on a card, what does nature mean to you? So really trying to tap into personal values as well as, you know, the business case and here are the tools and here's how, you know, an engineer can think about this. So it's still an ongoing process, but it's been interesting seeing them. You really kind of make that shift. And now we're in meetings with them. We're hosting a workshop with the Army Corps and other companies in December. And, you know, the engineers at Dow are leading the conversation the way that we would have early on, you know, thinking about these issues. And so it's been, you know, it's not everybody across the company, obviously, isn't thinking about this day to day, but I think it's something that has spread a lot as they've been able to think about how to really help enact that culture change.
I mean, you have this great kind of position where you both have the engineering background and then you have the nonprofit background. And of course, for our firms that are looking and saying, okay, well, you know, how do we increase revenue? How do we look at different opportunities to grow business? How do you see this as kind of influencing their decisions, or at least the way that they could potentially, you know, pitch business?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think at that project level, if you're thinking about this, in some ways I think about this as expanding the toolbox of the engineers, because sometimes there will be that, you know, the natural ecosystem that provides a benefit. You don't need to do anything other than make sure it stays there and is maintained. But oftentimes you're looking at hybrid solutions, or you're looking at, you know, some built infrastructure, some maybe constructed natural infrastructure. So it's partly about expanding kind of what the solutions are on the table. But in the end, if you're able to bring in these natural infrastructure elements, they often have additional community benefits. They're providing additional habitat for species. Those wetlands down in Texas are providing critical bird habitat. So you end up having broader benefits than just that one engineered solution. So I think it can partly be a way to bring more stakeholders to the table, get more interest in doing this. And I think at a broader level, stepping back beyond the project level, I think we've seen a number of young engineers really get excited about this work. So I think there's stepping into this space and, you know, more broadly in sustainability, but specifically around some of these nature-based elements, I think you have a chance to help attract and retain staff that might be interested in stepping into this new innovative space.
And Mike, that ties back to our first conversation about the activist engineer, especially with the young cohort of engineers that are exiting university and graduate programs, that they want to have that sense that they are making an impact on society and their environment. It kind of marries the two together, right?
It certainly does. And it reminded me of the discussions we've had at Engineering Change Lab around diversity within the engineering field, and the fact that we're not making progress at increasing the number of women and minorities who pursue engineering as a career. And what we've heard that the research shows is that women to a higher degree want to contribute to the needs of society in their work. And they don't make that connection with engineering. And in fact, when you look at engineering discipline by discipline, environmental engineering has a much higher percentage of women than the other disciplines. So it just reminds me of the importance of really educating young people about, you know, the importance of the work that we do, but along with that coming this responsibility to do things in a different way that is more respective of the environment and the other challenges that the world faces.
Absolutely. Jen, what have you seen on that side of things as far as, like you said, you know, younger engineers want to have a bigger impact on their societies, their communities in which they live and the environment. And then also the question of the makeup of the industry engaging in this, both from your experience working with the client side, with companies that are looking at doing this, and then also from the nonprofit side of things. How do you see that demographic change or an opportunity to bring more people into the engineering fold?
Yeah, and I guess I'm one of those examples of an engineer that sort of left the sector in that sense. But it also kind of come back to seeing that engineering can be a really big part of the solution. So I think it's, I think we see this across the board, but with engineering specific as well, you know, a lot of companies are thinking about sustainability because it is something that is, there's higher expectations from society, but there's also, you know, a chance to attract folks coming out of school who want to be part of the solution, who want to be tackling climate change. They want to be thinking about these bigger issues. They're thinking about social equity. They're thinking about a lot of these really complex issues that don't necessarily always, you can't always tackle them in a narrowly defined engineered project. So being able to expand how projects are designed, how you're engaging with different stakeholders, I think enables you to bring more people to the table within those projects, but also just within the engineering sector.
And on the flip side of that, let's take a look at the nonprofit side of things, because I think this is a good example of, you have the Nature Conservancy helping Dow Chemical, a fairly institutional client, look at things differently. If you have an engineering firm that is, small, mid-size, is really focused on work in its community or state or region, what do you think the opportunities are for those firms to ally themselves or create some kind of coalition relationship with an external nonprofit that speaks to, I guess, the larger environmental mission? What are the benefits there? Can you see that a firm would be able to say, oh yes, and we look at these challenges with the benefit of consultation or relationship with this nonprofit group, not engineers, but maybe they're environmental scientists, maybe they're, people who understand more of the social cultural impacts of things. Is that an opportunity that firms should take advantage of to try to, expand, their pool of talent to go and chase new business?
Absolutely. I think we partner with a lot of different engineering firms in different ways, and some of it's at the project level where we're actually designing, constructed wetlands in a way that'll provide protection in a way that the Conservancy wouldn't be able to do on our own. So some of it is in that practical, just getting the project done way. But we've also partnered with a number of companies, including the engineering sector, and we have the Natural Infrastructure Initiative as a partnership that we have with Caterpillar, AECOM, and a number of other firms that is focused on how do we increase investment in natural infrastructure, including getting into partnering on policy advocacy. So, and we also actually coming out of the work with Dow, we had a conversation with a number of companies where we actually looked at, they were saying, great, so Dow is thinking about this within their company. They kind of have set this path to think about natural infrastructure. How do we do that within our firms? So we've worked with BNSF and Boeing and AECOM and about five or six other firms to look at how do you actually operationalize this within a company? How do you think about national infrastructure? How do you get beyond some of the barriers you have within a company, and how do you learn from other companies to do that? So I think some of this can be, they're sort of the direct working on projects together, but some of it can also be opening up opportunities, whether it's on the policy side, whether it's kind of on the technical or kind of enabling conditions side. And this is actually where I was really excited when Mike reached out and I was able to learn about the Engineering Change Lab, because we've talked a lot about how do we help shift the engineering sector to think about these types of solutions around natural infrastructure, and how do you open the doors and to have them be bringing these solutions to the table for their clients. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for partnership whether it's with NGOs like Mike's, which is looking at how to shift the engineering sector directly, or with us that you know, can help partner and think about new solutions, bring different types of expertise to the table for projects, and also create new market opportunities for companies.
And I think your mention of advocacy is really important because you know the way things are shaping up here, and it's still very early, especially now. So you know we're in November and we're kind of trying to prognosticate what a Biden administration is going to be doing on infrastructure policy. But there have been stories about the selection process for you know his cabinet, and there was a recent article that kind of alluded to the fact that whoever's going to be selected for the Department of Transportation, or at least you know their focus, it's going to have to cross in with the larger issue of climate change or sustainability, right? There's going to have to be a, it looks like this issue, this big issue of just climate change in general, but all these related issues that go along with it, it's going to filter through the entire administration. That's what it looks like. So if this is the case and the next Secretary of Transportation is going to have this on their portfolio, it makes sense for the industry to have the knowledge base and the ability to talk about applying natural solutions to infrastructure projects if now there's going to be a greater component on whatever that, you know, whether it's going to be species conservation, wetlands issues, or just resiliency in infrastructure going forward for you know protection against you know wildfires, storms, hurricanes, and the like. You know, where do you see the industry having a voice here? I mean, do you think that this is something that they should really add into one of their core talking points when talking to policymakers?
If I could chime in there, if in fact the Biden administration does bring in people in the Department of Transportation or other areas where they're linking, you know, climate change and resilience to infrastructure, I think that is undoubtedly a positive. It's we have, you know, that's a consistent theme in our work. We need to understand the systems. You know, we've in the past we've too much tried to apply our engineering knowledge to a specific problem without an understanding of the entire system.
Yeah.
And if the administration goes in that direction, then there's a need for the engineering industry to be prepared to go there as well, right?
Yeah.
To go there with a better knowledge of the systems that we work in.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting point because it is going away from the project approach to that greater thought about how all the systems plug in together and reinforce each other. And, you know, how can the engineering community apply their skill in systems thinking to natural infrastructure solutions? And it's kind of a change in mindset, both educating policy and then educating their clients or prospective clients.
One of the things that's been a consistent theme at our Engineering Change Lab discussions is part of the answer to the question you just posed is more collaborations.
Yeah.
Like with NGOs, like Nature Conservancy, different types of staff within engineering firms, environmental scientists, or new people skilled in new types of technology and data and all of that, but it solving these complex problems of the future requires understanding the system, and it requires being willing to collaborate with lots of other disciplines, engineering, non-engineering, and with the public, the people that are impacted by the work.
I agree. And to build on that, I think, you know, at the individual level too, and I think it takes new types of skills, softer skills for engineers to have to do that, to think about, you know, how do you work with someone who's outside of your field and approaching a problem in an entirely different way, maybe in a different sector, and how do you kind of collaborate and bring together solutions in a new way that are, you know, not just the straight tried and true solutions solution you might have looked to in the past, but how do you create new types of solutions in that more complex complex landscape? So I think there's definitely, exciting opportunities to step back and do that, but at the individual engineer level, thinking about what are the new types of skills that they need to have as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And the firms that are going to be diversifying their talent are going to be the ones that really win. The one thing that example that comes to mind all the time is I was talking to one firm out of New England that handles bridge inspections. And they realized that they could start doing more bridge inspections more efficiently, not with putting people on cherry pickers under bridges, but starting to fly drones. Now all of a sudden they realize that they're training drone pilots. Now all of a sudden they realize they're an engineering firm plus almost a drone flight school. And it's like, they didn't think about that when they started, but now they find themselves in a different, not the same sector.
Yeah. So the way we add value is changing, right?
Uh-huh.
A lot of the traditional functions of an engineer, like visually inspecting a bridge, or like doing the hand calculations to design a road, all of that's becoming automated. So where are we going to add value? It's going to be a combination of the technical background that understands what goes into the automation with the ability to communicate and collaborate with new types of disciplines and with people about the work we do.
Yeah,
that's where we add value.
So, I mean, really, the firm of the future is going to look, I mean, there are firms that are doing this. I mean, there are firms that have, they have archaeologists on staff, they have the environmental scientists on staff. But we talked about last time, Mike, and about when we were talking about activist engineering, I posed the question of, the future engineer having that mix of hard and soft skills. Like Jen, you mentioned the softer skills or a background in the social sciences or environmental sciences. What do you think the firm of the future might look like in that case? Do you see, there being an equal mix of engineers and non-engineers or related professionals that support the overall engineering mission? Do you see it kind of as a engineering consultancy plus, this additional capability plugged into it? How do you think that is going to change over time?
Oh, I definitely think you just described what the firm of the future needs to be. Mm-hmm. Jeff, very much multidisciplinary, very much different types of people that have been there in the past. And, if we don't make that adaptation, then the risk is that engineering becomes rolled up into a larger tech company.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little off the subject of the environment, which we're talking about today, but Google has this new entity called Sidewalk Infrastructure Partners, which is designing and constructing infrastructure for autonomous vehicles. Well, they're not led by engineers. They're led by people out of the finance world and out of the tech world. They've got engineers somewhere, but they're not leading firms. So we need to adapt.
Yeah.
And I think the diversity needs to include the different disciplines, but having different perspectives at the table, whether it's within the firm or through stakeholder partnerships, that I think is critical too, because especially in these complex spaces, to understand who's benefiting, who's being impacted, and taking a broader view on that, I think is going to be really critical. So making sure that there aren't blind spots going in just because there isn't enough diversity at the table, that I think it'll help make stronger solutions in the end, and that'll be really critical as well.
Yeah, and also, those relationships with third-party organizations, I mean, that's another way of doing it for on a cost-effectiveness standpoint. If you're a smaller firm and you can't bring on new staff or open up an entire new department, creating those relationships with NGOs, creating those relationships with groups that can help you bring those voices to the table and bring in that perspective is critically important. So that's something that firms should be looking at as well. It's you have your traditional stakeholder groups that you normally do work with, but the benefit of looking for non-traditional stakeholders and creating inroads with them can pay dividends down the line. So I want to go back to the issue of, I guess, thinking in terms of systems and that question of how engineering community can apply greater skill in systems thinking in the application of natural infrastructure solutions. Jen, what's your take on that subject?
Yeah, no, I think it's really critical. So I think today, and we just look at the news today, we have, you know, climate change impacts happening around the world. We have social inequity and unrest. We have a pandemic with health issues attached to it. So many of the issues that we're dealing with today are really complex and require taking a more thoughtful and broader approach to doing that. And I think that is both in thinking about how you define the problem, but also what types of solutions you look to. So I think a systems approach is really critical and is potentially outside of how an engineer may approach a problem today, but I think it's something that is really important to bring a broader perspective, bring broader voices to the table to figure out how do we really solve these issues in a way that gets to solutions that are durable and actually effective.
And add to that, Jeff, at the same summit that Jen spoke at this past summer, one of our other speakers was from an initiative of the Lemelson Foundation and VentureWell. And they are working to transform the curriculum of engineering in colleges. Their premise is to make introduce environmentally responsible engineering into the curriculum for all disciplines. And they've developed this framework for how you do that. And at the center of that framework is producing young engineers who are good and skilled at systems thinking. Mm-hmm. That is the key to being more environmentally responsible. And it shows up more and more in all of the future issues that we delve into, whether it's diversity, that requires understanding the systems that produce engineers, or whether it's looking at the application of technologies and ensuring that the technologies are developed that are beneficial rather than harmful. And, you know, that requires a knowledge of the systems into which technology is introduced. So it's a skill we're not going to be able to get away from if we're going to remain relevant and contributing at a high level.
And from the advocacy perspective also, I mean, you know, for largely especially when Congress looks at issues related to infrastructure, they do have a very siloed approach, right? They don't think about things in that system setup. WERDA, the Water Resources Development Act, is separate from an infrastructure bill. Bills to work with, rail are separate from legislation that deals with, you know, wastewater management systems or pipes. You know, the Pipes Act for clean water. And it would also be beneficial that you have engineers who are engaged in advocacy, broaching the topic or subject of how to think about policy. And right, influencing that change, because if the laws, the authorizing legislation doesn't fully embrace the idea of systems, then it's also, you have these great new ideas coming from the engineering industry, but they have to almost take these flexible, more networked ideas and break them apart and fit them into different a round shape into a square hole kind of thing, when you have to deal with, where are these projects being funded? How are these projects being put out? So there's a benefit there as well. It's broadening not just the engineering perspective or the industry's perspective of private clients, but hopefully over time influencing the way that Congress, that maybe the states view infrastructure. And instead of having maybe sometimes it's separated from environmental issues, that there is a larger coordination between, different committees of jurisdiction. So that's something which is an interesting topic to think about, especially from ACEC and the advocacy perspective that we take, is helping policymakers understand what we do from a system standpoint. And I don't know, I personally don't know of a lot of talk happening around those issues. When I was on the committee, the T&I committee, we didn't really think about systems. We thought about bills, we thought about projects, but we never really thought about systems.
Well, you just hit on the messiest, complex, most complex system right? of all of them, right?
I know, right. Yeah, exactly. You know, legislation.
Yeah, well, I think, and this could be a next step, because we, the Conservancy has worked with ACEC actually directly and with a number of engineering firms and advocating for, and within WERDA or for national infrastructure as part of a lot of these areas, but this could be a next step too, because a lot of that work has been, how do you expand the view of how infrastructure is thought about to include national infrastructure, and this is kind of the next step from that. So it's not just thinking about new types within that within that silo, but how do you actually expand beyond, which could be really powerful.
Yeah, and it's its own battle, but you never know. I mean, this is one of those times where things change, right? You have this, you have a new administration that's going to be coming in. You have a Congress with a greater number of freshman lawmakers. And education has to start sometime, and this is when it could start. So, I mean, you know, Mike, we go back to referencing the seminars that the lab puts together. Where can people find those seminars? Where can they find the seminar that Jen was engaged with, and more information about the lab?
Well, our website is our primary repository of that information, www.ecl-usa.org. We have information there on all of our past summits, reports on the learning from those summits, as well as information on what's coming up in the future.
And Jen, on your side with the Nature Conservancy, where can people find more about the work that you've done and are continuing to do with this subject?
Sure. Yeah, you can go to our website. It's nature.org. A little bit simpler, but it's a good chance to see a lot of the work we're doing across protecting the lands and waters around the world, but also a lot of work around the space, around national infrastructure. So it's exciting space on the conservation side, and a lot of great opportunities to partner with the engineering sector as well.
Well, this is going to be an issue where it's not going away. It's just going to become more intertwined with our everyday lives and society and the way that the built environment looks and how we interact with it. So I'm sure we will have more opportunities in the future to talk about this, especially as we get into 2021 and we start looking, maybe we will have an infrastructure bill. And then if that comes up, we can have an opening for another conversation about this and different opportunities for our industry to engage. But for now, I do appreciate your time, Jen, and the work that you're doing with the Conservancy, and then also your work with the lab. And Mike, great to have you back on as well. I think that the Engineering Change Lab has a lot of great opportunities for our members, member firms to get engaged with. So I really appreciate you both coming back on the show.
Hey, Jeff, thank you again for the opportunity. Jen, thank you for being part of our work. And I'll take away from today's discussion, Jen, the idea of nature moments. I think it's a great idea. Yeah. So thank you for that idea.
I appreciate it. And thank you for the conversation, Jeff and Mike. Really looking forward to seeing where all this goes.
Well, we covered a lot of ground, and there's going to be a lot more ground to cover in the coming months. But for now, this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. Stay safe, everyone.